Welcome back to NFL Rants and Raves. I'm Stephen Miranda on Monday, 15th, 2014. Episode 10.15, the Week 2 Recap Show. My goodness, I am back in Southern California and the Rave Cave is on fire. Literally fire. I am recording after Monday Night Football. It's past 9 p.m. and it is 99 degrees in here. Ouch. Anyways, my birthday season is finally over. And it ended at Levi's Stadium, where I witnessed firsthand the 49ers implode against the Bears. Speaking of imploding, the NFL, is it about to implode? Well, they had a tough week last week as Adrian Peterson was indicted on charges of reckless or negligent injury to a child. And yet, again tonight, there is another report that Peterson was investigated for another case of abuse. Not good. The NFL is stumbling around surrounding the Ray Rice case, and they make announcement about hires within their offices. And in week two, many injuries knock out some of big names in the NFL. Let's just chomp it in and talk about it all. Continuing to bring American football to the world, it's Stephen Miranda with NFL Rants and Raves. And I forgot to mention that I go down again by one game to the fans in the weekly poll. It's going crazy. Lots of topsy-turvy stuff happening in the NFL. We'll start with current show news. More show donors have come in this week. I thank you very, very much. And it was just a great birthday season. I'm calling it a season because I know it's just a day where I was born, but I literally made it last week. I don't know how I did that. It was really cool. Had a lot of fun. Saw a lot of great friends and family and just nice. Thank you very much for everybody. I am doing pretty good. I had to take care of some stuff, and it's been taken care of, and I'm feeling pretty good. So thank you, everybody who showed concern for that. Let's get going here. I actually spent some good time with Jeff Ellis, of course, my brother-in-law, who used to do the show with me. We were in San Francisco. Well, first we were in Vegas for week one, and then we hung out a little bit during the week, and then we were in San Francisco for the opening of Levi Stadium. He has an interesting article coming up about that experience. Interesting stadium they have up there in San Francisco. I'll get to that in a moment. But first of all, in the survivor pool, 64% of all entries have already been eliminated after just 2 weeks. That's pretty crazy. So good luck to everyone who's still out alive. I'll be sending an email with what the pool looks like and what's at stake. So make sure that you look out for your emails if you're playing in the NFL Rants and Raves Survivor Pool. Birthday season is over, and all I can say is it was great to be hanging out with friends and family. Not so great about the week that was in the NFL, of course, surrounding the Ray Rice deal. And on the heels of that, there was an initial report that Adrian Peterson was indicted for charges of reckless or negligent injury to a child. And I didn't want to believe it because I like this kid a lot. I think if you've been listening to NFL Rants and Raves for a long time, you know that I am a huge proponent of Adrian Peterson as one of the best players, not just running back, one of the best players in the NFL. So I had no words. I was shocked when the news broke. I didn't say much. I didn't tweet about it. I didn't even write an article about it. I just wanted to just sit back and contemplate what in the world is happening to the sport that I love. Right now, as I said, he was indicted. He turned himself in over this weekend, early Saturday morning. There was the Minnesota Vikings kind of deactivating him pretty quickly on Friday. Told you a lot about what they were thinking. And he turned himself in Saturday morning. He was released on a $15,000 bond. And he's actually out now. The initial court date has been set for October 8th. Montgomery County in Texas. The arraignment will take place in the 9th District Court. Peterson has now, as of today, been reactivated by the Minnesota Vikings. He is going to participate in practices in full for the Vikings, and everyone is expecting him to play in Week 3 against the New Orleans Saints, which leads people to question, what are the Minnesota Vikings doing? They deactivated him. He missed a game. They didn't play very well. They got blown out by the Patriots, and now all of a sudden they're reactivating him again, and he's playing football again. So that's pretty much where it is to that point, until the report came out tonight during Monday Night Football that, you know, Peterson was charged with abuse previously. Now, his attorney and the Minnesota Vikings, I believe, are denying that, saying that, yes, there was an incident with one of his other four-year-old child. And I guess I'm starting to think now, is like, dude, how many children with how many different people do you have? Certainly not Cromartie status. Or I think that guy's got like 9 children with 9 different women. But Adrian Peterson obviously has been around the block himself. That report, as I said, is being refuted by Adrian Peterson's attorney. So I'm not sure what's going on there. Of course, this came on the heels of the Minnesota Vikings reinstating him. That's going to take a while to play out. The Vikings are saying that they want the legal action, obviously, to be played out. He's been released on bond. He's communicating. He has not denied doing anything. He just felt that he was punishing or disciplining his child. And to that I say, that's why I finally had to step up and speak up. Look, I am a kid who grew up in the 70s and 80s, back when, you know, spankings with belts and stuff were commonplace. Kids didn't sue their parents when they got hit. And I was actually fortunate, being the youngest of 10, and there's 10 kids in my family, that my dad pretty much was done with belts by the time it got to me growing up. One of my older brothers, had gotten a pretty bad whooping from my dad. He showed up drunk at an inopportune time. My dad was not in a good mood, and he whipped him pretty hard with a belt. I did not witness it. I was asleep at the time, but I've heard accounts throughout the years of that night. And after that night, my dad put away the belt and said, I'm not spanking my children no more. He scared himself because of how badly he whooped my brother Rick. And I never got whooped. I didn't need to get whooped. I knew that my dad was a pretty powerful man. And when he was angry, he was angry. You knew it. You knew he was angry. You knew that you messed up. And one of my things as a child is I never wanted to disappoint my dad. I never wanted to do anything to get that wrath. So I was pretty fortunate that I didn't get the belt, but I understand that my older brothers and sisters did get the belt. Nowadays, I disciplined my child. I used my hand. I spanked them on the butt. I've done both my oldest and my youngest. And all I have to tell you is that I've done it with success a couple times. And those things that they were getting grounded for and spanked for no longer occurred. And so to Adrian Peterson, I say, yeah, I'm all for disciplining your children. You can discipline your children. You don't have to use a tree branch, switch as they're calling it, and spank them 14 times to the point where you leave marks all over their body. Adrian, discipline your child. Spank them with your hand. It's just as powerful a message. And then give them a timeout. And then go in and talk to them about what it is they did wrong and why they got a spanking. But hitting them with a branch 14 times at the age of 4, that's not uncalled for. I mean, it's uncalled for. It's not called for. It's uncalled for. Should not happen, especially to a child that age, especially to the extent of which he did it to. So once again, don't get me wrong, people. I'm all for disciplining your children. I do it. And I had it. I was kind of had it done to me in a strange way because I saw what it did to my older brothers, and I didn't want to be the victim of that, so I just behaved, and I was a good kid. I expect now that one of the reasons why my daughters are such good kids is because I did discipline. I didn't let them get away with the temper tantrums and with the throwing of stuff. I could tell you as recently as a month ago, we were at a PetSmart where we were getting ready to adopt a puppy. And my girls were really good. I was holding the puppy, and the girls were right next to me, and they were looking at it and petting it and not fighting over the dog or saying, ah, give it to me or let me have it. Or, you know, they were just really good, well-behaved young ladies. And the store manager actually said to me, she's like, wow, you must rule with a heavy fist. And I said, excuse me? And she's like, your children are well-behaved. And I'm like, yeah, that has nothing to do with anything. I mean, I'm not ruling with an iron fist. Have I spanked them a couple times each? But they get the picture. They know that there's a time and a place for stuff. They know that temper tantrums are certainly not allowed in front of me or at any point for any reason. And they know how to make good choices because of it. And they're well-behaved when we're out in public. I love that about my daughters. They know that there's a time and a place to goof around with daddy, and daddy can be silly and funny, and they could jump around, and you know, I actually cause more damage when we're goofing around than they do. But there's also a time and a place, especially when you're out in public, when you're at a restaurant, when you're out in the store, where you behave and you act good, and you make good choices, and you make good judgments, and you don't run around all over the place acting like a little crazy person. And I think that that has something to do with me disciplining them when they're young. But I didn't use a switch. I didn't have to spank them repeatedly 14 times. Two good swift spankings on the butt. Go sit on your bed. I'll come talk to you in a minute. And then I went in and I explained to them what was wrong with what they did, why they shouldn't do it again. And that was the end of it. And they're growing up to be good little girls. And I'm very happy about that fact. So you can discipline your children without going to an extreme. I do believe, and this is going to sound like I'm defending Adrian Peterson. I'm not, but I just do believe that at a certain point, Adrian Peterson knew what he was doing. He thought he was disciplining his child. Did he intend to brutally hurt him? I don't think so. I think he wanted to scare the kid, which he succeeded. And I just think he went too far. But there are consequences with that, especially in this day and age. So that's all I'm going to say about that. The Adrian Peterson thing is done. I'm not even going to go back to the Ray Rice thing other than talk about what the changes the NFL is making about in a minute. But I'm a little sad. I'm a little saddened that some big-name players who play the game that I love and the game that I love to talk about are just committing some pretty stupid violent acts. I think they're dumb, and there is no excuse for them. There's no excuse for beating a child 14 times with a stick. I don't understand what that accomplishes other than the child being afraid of you. And if that's what you want from your children, then that's what you do, I guess. I don't think that my daughters are afraid of me. They just understand that there's a time and a place. Time and a place to have fun, time and a place to be good. And they understand that. And I think I made that pretty clear. And my girls are good about that. Now I believe your son will fear you. And, of course, isn't going to do whatever it is to get that kind of punishment again. But I think it's gone too far. So that's my take on the Adrian Peterson situation. He's back on the football field. I'm sure the Minnesota Vikings will have them on the football field until either A, he's found guilty or he's found not guilty. That just goes to another thing. Good luck finding 12 people in the state of Texas where Adrian Peterson is regarded as a football stud to find him guilty of anything. We'll see how that goes. That's all I've got to say about that. Now, in wake of the Ray Rice situation, the NFL has made some changes. Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the league, has sent out a memo to all of its teams and NFL staff saying that Anna Isaacson, the NFL's Vice President of Community Affairs and Philanthropy, is going to have an expanded role within the NFL. She is also now becoming the Vice President of Social Responsibility. The league has also hired senior advisors Lisa Frail, Jane Randall, and Rita Smith. Lisa Frail is the former head of the Sex Crimes Prosecution Unit in the New York County District's Attorney's Office. And Jane Randall is the co-founder of No More. And Rita Smith is the former executive director of the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence. These four ladies are going to help shape policy for the NFL as far as domestic violence is concerned. And once again, I think, you know, this is something that's needed. But I will ask the commissioner and I will ask the NFL, why now? Why not earlier? Why did it take this horrific video of Ray Rice to come out for you to make this sweeping change within your landscape? There have been plenty of domestic violence cases before in the NFL, and the league sort of just kind of glossed over it. Now, because fans and people all over the country are up in arms, they're making sweeping changes. I think it's good. It's never too late. I just wish I would have seen this sooner from the NFL. And it's a good start. I think that Lisa Frail is going to be a great integral key cog into this foursome of ladies helping shape the domestic violence policy and social responsibility of the players of the league. And I hope this helps. I hope this sends a message to all the players, to all the teams, saying that this is not going to be tolerated. And hopefully the teams step up and see that as something that they need to take care of. Finally, injuries hitting and decimating the NFL. Injuries continue to pile up in the National Football League, and week two was just crazy. Crazy. Obviously, Adrian Peterson, as we said, was deactivated. He didn't play. The Carolina Panthers kind of shocked me and surprised me. They deactivated Greg Hardy just before Sunday's game. He didn't play in that game, so that was, I believe, a good move. But Robert Griffin III dislocated an ankle. DeSean Jackson, teammate wide receiver, also suffered an injury. A.J. Green suffered turf toe. He'll be out till at least week five or six. Knowshon Moreno suffered an elbow injury. He's going to be out for a while and miss a significant amount of time. He left in the loss to the Buffalo Bills. And he had a dislocation to his elbow. That's not good. DeSean Jackson he was looking pretty good in that game. He actually caught a couple passes before he was hit. And he is now expected to miss several games. The Redskins don't know what they're going to do yet with Robert Griffin III. They did release today that there's no fracture, so that's a good sign, but that he is going to miss time. They just don't know how much time is going to miss. In the meantime, Kirk Cousins is going to get the start there for the Washington Redskins, and he looks pretty good. He looked pretty good against the Jacksonville Jaguars, although, come on, it's just the Jacksonville Jaguars. However, he was enough to have the Redskins beat the Jacksonville Jaguars handily. As I said, A.J. Green with his turf toe is expected to be out till at least week five, maybe even a couple weeks after that. So that was pretty huge in the Sunday night football game that I was a witness. Charles Tillman of the Chicago Bears suffered an injury. He was placed on the IR today by the Chicago Bears, which means that I'm looking to see if he was going to miss the entire season or if he is on the IR recall list. That's not good for Tillman because he actually had a pretty awesome interception in that game. This is going to be bad news for the Bears. He's going to be out as he tore his tendon. Ooh, gosh, that's hard. It's the same injury that he suffered last year. He tore his right triceps, and he's being placed on the IR. He's out for the remainder of the season. Last year, I think he suffered the same injury at like week eight, so he missed half the season. So he's 2 years now that poor Tillman can't finish the season for the Chicago Bears. Bad news there all around. And injuries are just a big part of the game now. Jamaal Charles for the Kansas City Chiefs suffered a high ankle sprain. He had to leave the game. It's just huge. Huge names. Mark Ingram, running back for the New Orleans Saints. He had two touchdowns in the game And soon after his second touchdown, he broke his hand. He's going to be out at least a month, could be a little bit more. So the New Orleans Saints are now going to rely on rookie or second-year man Robinson to tote the ball a little bit more. There's just so many injuries. I'm not asking for any sympathy at all because it's just fantasy football. But I do want to tell you my lineup in fantasy football for this one roster. And it included Knowshon Moreno, who I didn't talk about. Knowshon Moreno, the running back for the Miami Dolphins, suffered an injury and missed the majority of the game. He's going to be out for a while. So I had Knowshon Moreno. He gave me 0 points because he didn't do much before he suffered an injury and was knocked out. I had A.J. Green, once again, knocked out early in the game, first quarter. I think only had one catch before he left. He may not even gotten a ball. DeSean Jackson, 1 point, as he got knocked out with his injury. I had Mercedes Lewis. Fortunately for me, Mercedes Lewis, the tight end, was pretty stud-like, being scoring a touchdown before he suffered his injury. And Mercedes Lewis, the tight end for the Jags, is going to be out for a while. And that team scored a whopping 45 points. That's right, 4-5, you heard me correct. This was a team that week one scored over 110 points. So that's just the kind of season some fantasy football players are going to have this year. It was brutal that A.J. Green, DeSean Jackson, and Knowshon Moreno, guys that you expect to get double-digit points every week, all got hurt. I'm more concerned, obviously, for the players. I am a big fan, and I've always been a big fan. I think I've said this many times on the show. I want the best players on the football field. I don't want you to come with your team to play my team, and you're missing your two top wide receivers and your top running back. That doesn't make me happy, because you know what fans say after that? Well, you know, you beat us, but we didn't have so-and-so, and so-and-so was out, and so-and-so was not in that game because he messed up his leg. And, you know, you want to beat a team at full strength. That's how you want it. There are some people who are like, no, I hope they all go down, and then we just play a whole bunch of scrubs. It's an easy win. I don't want an easy win. I want to beat you at your best. That's what I want. And right now, these injuries are killing me because we're not seeing every team at their best. Far, far, far too many injuries. Mark Ingram there to miss about a month with a broken hand. Just too many injuries. Too crazy week two. They kept going on. They were going down like flies just as I was watching those early games. And I hope each and every one of those players that I just mentioned with a speedy, speedy recovery to get back onto the football field to help their teams. Let's get to looking at all of the games of week two. First of all, I'd like to say congratulations to the fans again, as Matthew Parsons gets the fans another win, this time taking the week again. He went 9-7, while I was an abysmal 8-8. That's right, you heard me, 8-8. 9-7 for Matthew Parsons. It was just a bad week. There were so many upsets. San Francisco losing Sunday Night Football at home. The Colts tonight on Monday Night Football, after having such a huge lead over the Philadelphia Eagles, lose at home. They fall to 0-2. That's right. You heard me. 0-2. Right now, they are at the bottom of the division with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Houston at 2-0 leads the division, and Tennessee is at 1-1. Ouch for Indianapolis, a team that I thought would run away with the AFC South. They've got a lot of work to do, obviously. So let's start on Thursday Night Football, where the Pittsburgh Steelers traveled to Baltimore to face the Ravens. Right off the bat, Matthew Parsons had the Ravens. I had the Steelers, and before I could even blink, I was down 0-1 for the week. The Pittsburgh Steelers looked awful, awful. And you know what? For as bad as they were against the Cleveland Browns the week before, they had a 27-3 lead and then didn't score again until they had to kick a field goal late to win the game to win 30-27. I should have known something was up with Pittsburgh, and then especially with them having to go on the road against a division rival that had their backs up against the wall, had lost the week before. Baltimore really needed the win. Obviously, Matthew got the better of me there. The Baltimore Ravens just look clean and crisp, and their defense just got after Ben Roethlisberger. Roethlisberger took hit after hit. He had a pick. There were some untimely fumbles there by the Pittsburgh Steelers. It was not a pretty game for Pittsburgh. And once again, the home team prevails on Thursday Night Football. I'm telling you, it's going to have to be a complete mismatch for me to not take the home team from now on Thursday Night Football. We'll travel to Sunday as the Miami Dolphins travel to Buffalo to face the Bills. Yes, yes, the Buffalo Bills, they got a big win. And you know what? Both Matthew and I had the Miami Dolphins in this one. And I don't know what we were thinking. We were wrong, people. Buffalo, it's not like we were wrong. It was 9-0 at the half. So at the halftime, it was anybody's game. I don't know what Miami was thinking. I don't know what they were doing. They just were not the same football that beat the New England Patriots the week before. And here's the thing. The Miami Dolphins game was kind of like, oh, look at us. We are so good. We have defeated the New England Patriots. And from now, everything is going to be a cakewalk. And we're just going to walk up and down and defeat everybody. And it's not the way it goes, especially against a division rival on the road in their hometown. The Buffalo Bills were pumped. They had so much going on for them. It was like the Miami Dolphins, the Buffalo Bills, they had the Jim Kelly story going. They were unveiling the name of Wilson Jr. up in their wall. The Pegulas having just bought the team and got the agreement to do that. You know, the tribute to Ralph Wilson. There was just so much momentum for the Buffalo Bills. The crowd was, I'm sure, just electric. And Greg from the Buffalo Bills Review was trying to tell me, it's like, don't sleep on the Bills. And sure enough, I kind of slept on them. But you know what? Spiller had a huge 102-yard return for a touchdown. That was pretty amazing. And outside of that, their offense kind of looked pedestrian. Sammy Watkins did finally show why the Bills were so keen on taking him. He had 8 catches for 170 yards and a touchdown. He looked great, but E.J. Manuel didn't ask him to do much. He only threw the ball 26 times for 202 yards, only completed 16 of them. So that's still not great. I just think it was more the Miami Dolphins were just not ready. It was a kind of a case of, we're just a little too cocky right now. We got a little cocky. We knocked off the Patriots. We got some cockiness. We went on the road. We weren't prepared for all of the excitement and all the euphoria that the Buffalo Bills had going on with all their momentum. And it backfired on the Dolphins, and they lost. They lost a crucial game that could have given them a definitive 2-0 lead in the division. Instead, the Buffalo Bills now lead the AFC East at 2-0. And everyone else in that division is 1-1. Very interesting to see how the rest of that is going to play out. Later tonight, when I do TV for Sky Sports News as I recap week 2 for them, if you're in London, by the way, or in the UK, make sure you catch that 10:45 your time as we break down some of the stuff happening in week 2. We're actually going to talk about which 2-0 teams we think are pretenders and are not going to reach the playoffs. I may pick the Bills, but that's just me. Oh, Greg just got crazy there. He just went a little crazy when I said that. But that's it. 29-10 final. Both Matthew and I missed that game. Moving on to Carolina, where nothing would be finer than to be in Carolina for a Panthers football game.
Stand and cheer for the Panthers. Stand and cheer for the team. The pride of both Carolinas and city of the Queen.
Carolina!
Stand and cheer for the Panthers. In our grand old name. Nothing could be finer than to be in Carolina for a Panthers football game.
There you go. Nothing would be finer than to be in Carolina. And once again, why, people? Why would you let me get hoodwinked by the Detroit Lions again. They have a great week one. They spanked the New York Giants. Calvin Johnson is a monster. He's Megatron. He turns into a Transformer whenever he wants. They look fantastic. Joik Bell runs the ball at will. Reggie Bush adds a spark. And I'm like, these Detroit Lions are for real. I'm taking the Lions on the road. And then they go to Carolina and lay a big, fat, stupid egg. Are you kidding me? You guys seriously let me do that. Well, I went along with Matthew. Both he and I took the Detroit Lions to go into Carolina and get the win. And Carolina, my friends, is sitting atop the NFC South with a perfect 2-0 record. They are looking really good right now. Now, the Detroit Lions, they're going to play with me. They're going to do Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde all year long. I just see it coming now. They're driving me crazy. They couldn't do anything. Offensively, they couldn't do anything. It was just not pretty. The Carolina defense is for real, people. They play hard. And Cam Newton was not that bad. Not that bad to watch. I didn't see much of this game. I only saw some of the offensive drives by the Detroit Lions. But Cam Newton, 281 yards passing and a touchdown. Jonathan Stewart out of nowhere helping the running game for the Panthers. And offensively, Matt Stafford barely completed a little more than half his passes. He 48 pass attempts, only completed 27. There was no ground game to speak of. Joik Bell only had 36 yards on 10 carries. And Megatron was even held in check. He had 6 receptions for 83 yards, no touchdowns. They kind of, I think Carolina kind of gave the blueprint of how you can stop Calvin Johnson. And that's just the way it was. The Lions just did not perform well. And Carolina's defense, remember, was playing without Greg Hardy, who got deactivated just before the game. They still got after Matthew Stafford. They were just at him. And it was a big win, 24-7 for Carolina. We were both wrong, and that's why I made an 8 this week, because – you know, I threw up a bunch of Hail Marys, and none of them were answered. So Carolina gets a good win. Detroit at 1-1 sits at 1-1 with everyone else in the NFC North. Bears, Vikings, Lions, Packers all at 1-1, and that's going to be a very interesting division. All right, folks. It is getting a little crazy hot in here. The Rave Cave continues to be, it's 97, so it has dropped 2 degrees now that we've got the air going and stuff, but it is still crazy uncomfortable, and I am crazy uncomfortable, let's just put it that way. So I'm going to rapid fire through these. Atlanta had no business being in Cincinnati. Matt Ryan just did not look good at all. The defense was way too much for the Falcons. Giovanni Bernard was way too much for the Falcons defense. He had 90 yards rushing and 79 yards receiving, touchdown, just impressive. 24-10, Cincinnati wins, and that is, of course, despite them not having A.J. Green, who was hurt with turf toe. So good win there for the Cincinnati Bengals. Both Matthew and I have the Bengals. Next game, I think I owe an apology to the Cleveland Browns. The Browns upend the New Orleans Saints, 26-24. The Saints fall to 0-2 to start the season. Not good at all. They had a commanding lead back-to-back weeks where the Saints have leads and they just let them slip away. That's on Ryan. That's on Rob Ryan. You know, that defense just gave up way too many easy plays to the Cleveland Browns, especially late in the game when they had taken a 24-23 lead there over the Cleveland Browns late in the game, and they couldn't shut the Browns out. The Browns got in the field goal range, got a gimme field goal to win 26-24 there. That's all on Ryan. It's always been on Ryan. There's something that the Saints have to do about that defense, because once again they are starting to look that bad as a defensive unit. 26-24 there to Cleveland. Someone asked me, what do you think of Cleveland now? I said, look, you got to now respect the Cleveland Browns. They were getting blown out by Pittsburgh. They crawled back into that game, tied it up late, and the Steelers had to score a field goal late in the game to win. This week, they were losing again at home to New Orleans, I think a team that was probably better, but they didn't give up. They crawled right back into it. They took a lead. The Saints took the lead back again, and they didn't give up. They went back on there, scored a field goal late to win the game. You cannot sleep on the Cleveland Browns, especially if you take a lead. I think that you got to take a lead against the Cleveland Browns and then just go for the juggler. Go for the knockout blow. You cannot let them get back into it, because if they hang around and hang around, they'll come back and they'll sneak a win right away from you. Now, the New England Patriots at Minnesota Vikings. New England rolled 30-7. It was never close. The Vikings scored the first touchdown. They were up 7-0, and the New England Patriots scored 30 unanswered points in this one to get the job done 30-7. I knew I had originally taken the Minnesota Vikings, but when Adrian Peterson was deactivated, I did flip over to the Patriots, because there's just no way without Peterson that the Minnesota Vikings were going to get that done. 30-7, the win there. Both Matthew and I had that pick. The Arizona Cardinals traveled to New York to face the Giants, 25-14 Arizona on the road. I had the Cardinals. Matthew, for the fans, had the New York Giants. Look, I don't trust the New York Giants at all. Eli Manning had another couple picks in this game. Just not very good. Not good decision-making. The offense doesn't look like anybody is on the same page for Eli Manning. His receivers aren't really doing much at all. Reuben Randle did finally score a touchdown this week. But even with no Carson Palmer, who I thought he was starting, but instead it was Stanton who was starting in place of Carson Palmer. It didn't matter. Drew Stanton was efficient. He didn't have to do much. Larry Fitzgerald had 6 catches for 51 yards. They got him involved early, but once again, the best target for Eli Manning was Donnell, the tight end, who had 7 receptions for 81 yards. Victor Cruz got a little bit involved, and I said Reuben Randle had that touchdown, but they're still not on the same page. Eli Manning, if you look at him, yeah, he had 2 touchdowns, but he also had 2 INTs, and they just have no ground game. There's no balance to that football team right now. They look discombobulated when they're on offense, and it was easy for me to take the Arizona Cardinals, so that is one that I got over the fans. The next game, the Dallas Cowboys traveled to Tennessee to face the Titans. This was a game that the Cowboys, for once, dominated from the beginning. They dominated the entire first half and then did enough in the second half to keep the win 26-10, 16-point victory over Tennessee. They were 3-point dogs. It was easy for me to take Dallas. I knew that there was no way the Cowboys would allow themselves to start 0-2. It's just not a good position to be in, especially in their division. So they took it to Tennessee early. It was the ground game. DeMarco Murray, over 140 yards rushing. He had a couple touchdowns. He was just on fire. It was actually just 1 touchdown. I'm sorry. The second touchdown was a Dez Bryant catch. Little 2-yarder. It was very nice. DeMarco Murray, 167 yards on the ground. And the Cowboys are finding the balance that they wanted. They want to run the ball. I mean, when you have a 100-yard rusher and a 100-yard receiver like the Cowboys did, Murray with, like I said, 167 and a touch, Bryant with 103 and a touch. The only thing that concerned me about the Cowboys is too many times they had to settle for field goals. That's not going to cut it later on when you play some tougher opponents. They got to find a way to make sure that those field goals turn into touchdowns early. Bailey had to kick 4 field goals in this game for Dallas to win. We both had Dallas, so that was a win for both of us. Moving on to Jacksonville as they face the Washington Redskins. This was the game, as we spoke earlier. DeSean Jackson was hurt. Robert Griffin III dislocated his ankle. But Jacksonville just is Jacksonville. 41-10 blowout win by the Washington Redskins at home. Jags are going to be kind of tough at home, but they're just not going to get it done on the road. It was a big win for Washington, especially with Kirk Cousins taking over at the helm. Now, some people, the big debate now is Cousins is the guy. Is Cousins going to be the guy? You know, even if RG3 gets healthy, Does he get his starting job back? Kirk Cousins was 22 of 33 for 250 yards and two touchdowns. Alfred Morris added 85 yards rushing on the ground and two touchdowns. Paul, the tight end, had eight catches for 99 yards and a touch. They used a whole lot of everybody in this football game. So, Washington 41, Jacksonville 10. Jags fall to 0-2, and just don't see them picking up a win anytime soon. The Seattle Seahawks at San Diego Chargers. This is the one I'll spend a little time on because it was the challenge game. Oh, yeah, just this game caught me by surprise. The San Diego Chargers looked to me like there was no way they'd be able to protect Phillip Rivers from the defense that just got in there and got in there pretty quick and hurt people. But somehow Phillip Rivers was able to find his man Antonio Gates, the tight end that will not go down, will not go away. He scored three touchdowns in this game, and this made me have to play this song.
San Diego Superchargers, San Diego Chargers, San Diego Superchargers, San Diego Chargers. We're coming your way. We're gonna dazzle you with our play.
To give it up to the San Diego Chargers, and I'll give it up to Matthew, who earns himself this.
I am the smartest man alive!
Back-to-back weeks to the start of the season, and I get beat down twice in the challenge game. I'm not looking forward to whatever punishment you guys are going to come up with, because I know it will be ugly, and I don't want that. So, it's time for me to kick it up in gear. But anyway, San Diego, you got to give it up to them. 30-21 win over the defending Super Bowl champion, the Seattle Seahawks. I should have known they're just not the same team on the road. You know, they're just not. And I thought, yeah, but they're on the road, but it's still on the West Coast. They're going to be over here. Apparently, it was brutally hot. And trust me, I was up in San Diego, and I was staying with my brother-in-law who lives in Aptos by the ocean. Very nice place. He's literally like a mile from the ocean. And it was just cool and breezy and beautiful, and I loved it, every minute of it. And I kept hearing how hot it was back home in Pasadena, how hot and humid it was in San Diego. And it's probably just an environment that the Seattle Seahawks weren't used to, and they got beat down. And the San Diego Chargers just imposed their will, 30-21, getting the win, and most importantly, getting the challenge game win for the fans. Finally, there's still a few more games, but I'm just going to rapid fire through those. Tampa Bay loses at home to the St. Louis Rams, 19-17. The Bucs apparently are just not ready to be trusted. I thought that they would, get a win because they were going to be facing a Rams team that was without their starting quarterback, without their second-string quarterback. They were starting their third-string quarterback. And if you lose to the second bumblebee tuna on a team, you're just not worthy to be talked about. I can't believe that both Matthew and I had the Bucks. The Kansas City Chiefs traveled to Denver to face the Denver Broncos. And the Denver Broncos, once again, I'm starting to get a little concerned because the Broncos had pretty huge leads in their two games, last week against Indy, this week against Kansas City. And then they had to fight hard near the end of the game to protect that lead. And they snuck out with a 24-17 victory, mostly because Alex Smith, I think, threw the football to the wrong player when they had fourth and goal from inside the Denver Bronco 5-yard line. There was another wide receiver wide open. He kind of tried to throw it in the middle, and it was an incomplete pass. And it stayed 24-17, and Denver won the game. The Broncos, I think, need to be a little bit concerned. They need to be concerned that they're giving up too many points late in games. They got to find a way to solve that. But right now they're humming. They're 2-0, while the Chiefs fall to 0-2. The New York Jets travel to Green Bay to face the Packers. The Green Bay Packers were losing by 17 points. Somebody told me Packers are down by 17. I was like, what? Are you kidding me? Well, they came back, and they took a 31-24 lead. Now, here's where it gets interesting. I have yet to see the play, but it is being reported, or I was reported to me while I was getting ready to watch Sunday Night Football, that Rex Ryan called a timeout to basically call back a touchdown. The Jets had scored the tying touchdown to make it 31-31, but just before that play was snapped, Rex Ryan called a timeout, icing his own offensive unit, basically. So the touchdown did not count, 31-24. They couldn't score again, and the Packers snuck away with a win. I'm looking forward to seeing that and how that all played out. The Houston Texans, they go over to Oakland, and they just pound the Raiders 30-14, leaving. I think Woodson said today, we're just not very good. They're not. The Raiders are not good. James Jones had a catch. He fumbled. He recovered his own fumbled. He ran some more, and then he fumbled it again. That's how bad the Raiders are, that even when they make a mistake and they correct their mistake, they make the same mistake again. 30-14, Houston with the win. Houston now 2-0 atop of their division, and that is something that I wouldn't have called at all. The Chicago Bears travel to San Francisco Sunday Night Football. This is the football game that I was at. It was impressive stadium on the inside, not so much on the out. The outside of the stadium, Jeff is calling it a bug-like exoskeleton. I just think it's a big chicken box with chicken wire, but that's just me. But then you go inside, and this thing is pretty amazing inside. It's green. It has a rooftop plant pool party or something like that. No, it's not. It's a rooftop garden lounge is what it is. And the rooftop garden has all kinds of plants native to California. And those plants, along with the 39,000 solar panels that they have, produce enough energy to power the entire stadium for all 10 home games. That is impressive. It's very green. It's very nice inside. The Yahoo Sports Fantasy Football Lounge is amazing. If you've got fantasy football teams going and you're at that 49er fan, there's no way where else I'd want to be with the up-to-the-minute tickers and stats and stuff. It looks amazing. The United Lounge was pretty fantastic. The Levi's 501 Club, you know, Levi Stadium. It says Levi's everywhere in that stadium. Inside, the different spaces, the way they made their spaces kind of be available to however you want to watch a game at the stadium, you can in the stadium. If you want to party and drink and have a blast while you watch the game, you can do that. If you want to track your fantasy football teams while you watch the game, you can do that. If you just want to be a fan and watch the football game, you can do that. They have an app that you can download to your phone, and you may place an order with the app, and they bring you your beverage or your food to your seat. That's amazing. So you don't have to leave your seat to go get food or beer or drinks. That's really cool. I got to give it to the 49ers inside of the stadium. I'm impressed. Outside of the stadium, it just left something to be desired. It just did not look attractive on the outside. But inside, man, state of the art. The amount of hotspots that they have, free wireless for everyone. And I'm talking about you get on that wireless, not once do you have a problem and say, wow, this wireless is slow. They literally have a hotspot box every 100 seats, not to mention the big their big repeaters. It is amazing, the tech-savvy stadium and how green it is in the toilets, in the restrooms. They're using recycled water where they actually have to put a sign and tell you, don't drink the water from the toilet because it's recycled water. You know, I've never drank water from toilets, but I guess people do it, so they have to put a sign. So that's really cool. They're using recycled water. They have the energy from the solar panels and the rooftop garden. And it's green and it's spacious, and the spaces are made to be fun, to hang out and have a good time watching the San Francisco 49ers. The problem was The Chicago Bears didn't care about all that. They just wanted to play a football game. And even though San Francisco had a huge lead, Colin Kaepernick decided to get a case of the interceptions, and he threw several. I think he threw three, had a fumble, and let Chicago crawl back into it. Brandon Marshall was a beast, scoring three touchdowns, one of them the 100-handed grab. If you have not seen that one-handed grab by Brandon Marshall where he reached up with one hand and he pulled the ball out of the sky to score a touchdown, that was pretty amazing. And the Chicago Bears kind of ruin the opening of the new state of Levi Stadium for the San Francisco 49ers by stealing a 28-20 victory at the hands of the San Francisco 49ers. Both Matthew and I had the Niners, and we lost that. Both Matthew and I had the Indianapolis Colts on Monday Night Football. The Colts, that just finishing up just minutes ago. The Colts having a huge lead, blowing that interception late by Luck. Let's Philadelphia get back into the game. They tie it 27-27. Then there's 3:25 to go, and you think, well, that's plenty of time for Andrew Luck, right? Andrew Luck's got all the time in the world he needs at 3:25. He's going to march down the field, score, you know, get him in field goal range, or score a touchdown. It's game over. Well, then the play calling was all of a sudden a little crazy. They went run, run, then have to throw on 3rd and 5 and incomplete, and they didn't want to go for it because they were deep in their territory, so they punt the ball away, and they never got the ball back. Philadelphia kind of marched down the field, got into field goal range, kicked the field goal, and won 30-27, dropping Indianapolis to 0-2, while the Philadelphia Eagles improved to 2-0. That's the final, and both of us had Indy there. We both missed on that one. 9-7 went Matthew for the fans. I went 8-8. The fans overall are 21-11 for the season. I'm at 19-13 at 59.3%, not very good, while the fans are at 66%. That's all the time I got out of here. It's still 97 degrees in the Rave Cave, way too hot for me. If it sounded like I had no energy throughout parts of this podcast, it's because the heat in here is so intense, it is driving me crazy. It's time for me to go home, get a few hours of sleep before I go to the studio to do week 2 recap for Sky Sports News. Make sure you catch it if you are in the UK area. Thanks for listening to NFL Rants and Raves. Congratulations to Matthew Parsons and the fans for getting week 2 on me. That means now Jeremy and Matthew have taken care of business. So I'm going to have to up my game if I want to get back into this. I'm Stephen Miranda, and you've been listening to NFL Rants and Raves. I'm out.